This is Guardian Radio 96.9 FM, Nassau, Bahamas.
The views and opinions of the hosts and guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect the position of the management and staff of Guardian Network.
I'm not afraid, to take a stand.
Live Off the Record with Shivago Lang is sponsored by the Cleveland Clinic, Fidelity Bank Bahamas, RF Bank and Trust, and Royal Star Assurance.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to Z Live. I'm Shivago Lang, your host. So glad you could join us here today on Guardian Radio 96.9 FM on this beautiful Monday afternoon. I hope you had a great weekend. If you want to call us today, the numbers are 323-6232. That's 323-6232 or 325-4316. 325-4316 or 325-4259. That's 325-4259. You can text us on 422-4796. That's 422-4796. Or you can WhatsApp me on 439-3043. That's 439-3043. We are live on Cable Bahamas, channel 969. That's how my mother listens to the show. Or you can catch us on BTC Flow channel 612. That's BTC Flow Channel 612. Let me begin our show today by expressing my sincere sympathy over the passing of the Honorable Vernon Simonette. And whether that is honorable is a title officially deserved by him or not, I don't really care. He was an honorable person to me. Vernon Simonette, the former member of parliament for Inagua and former speaker of the House of Assembly, was just one of the most gracious, likable, jolly human beings I have ever met in my life. Whether you met him by yourself or with a group of people, just a delightful person. You walked away from him the way you hope people walked away from you. And I know for too many instances, people didn't walk away from me like that. Just feeling good about yourself or feeling better about yourself. He was not cantankerous. He was not belligerent. Very easygoing, very genuine, sincere man. And always, even if he disagreed with you, it was an agreeable disagreement. And, he served our country and served our country well. He left a mark. Not the mark so much as in he built buildings or docks and bridges, etc. He left the kind of human mark I would hope that one day I could leave on planet Earth, because he was just a fantastic person. And our condolences go out to his family and all of his friends and communities that he served. Vernon Simonette, what a man. What a man, sir. I salute you. And then now I got up this morning and discovered that a great deal of the people who man the gateways to our country's tourism product, particularly the one that is serviced by air, the airports, that they decided that they would not show up for work, according to an article in the Nassau Guardian written and I guess it was written by the editor, that 90% of the folks, according to the director of labor, Robert Farquharson, staff at the airport in New Providence didn't show up to work, and 100% in the Family Islands didn't show up to work. They were asked to return to work by Minister Keith Bell, the Minister for Labor. As the action, as far as I'm aware, was not a action based on any approved strike. And the Deputy Prime Minister, the Minister of Tourism, said that they were not going to be strong-armed by anyone in this way. So that's the airport, airline, and allied workers' unions' actions that we are talking about, essentially. Now, I don't need to tell any Bahamian, but let me say it anyhow, that there is no possibility whatsoever imaginable. There might be an unimaginable possibility, but not an unimaginable one, where the Bahamas sees better economic times outside of a robust return of tourism. There is no imaginable possibility. All of you who are interested in diversification, bless the Lord, wonderful thing to pursue. All of you who want to comment that we should be relying on something else, wonderful, fantastic. Thank you for your comments. All of you who will want to text me and argue with me, that's why we should have. Wonderful. Thank you for your opinion and thoughts. None of that matters to the reality of this day. And the reality of this day, untouched by any Obisha Shura, is that outside of a robust tourism sector, this country's economy is stuck. That's reality. We need those tourists. We need them to come. And any disruption to that flow tanks this economy for the immediate and medium-term future. So those people who decide that they are not going to show up to work and therefore paralyzes the gateways, that the biggest paying people to our shores come in, they are definitely running the risk of tanking the Bahamian economy. Now, am I therefore saying they shouldn't do what they're doing? I don't even get caught up in that, because human beings will do what human beings will do. I am past in my lifetime now arguing about things where people get to control doing what they do. Because sometimes people do things for stupid reasons, but they still do it. Sometimes they do it for sensible reasons, and they still do it. Sometimes they are childish when they do it, and they still do it. Sometimes they are mature when they do it, and they still do it, right? That's neither here nor there. I can't get caught up in that. I'm talking about the consequences of the actions, right, on this economy. And any prolonged, sustained disruption to our tourism flow is going to stick the Bahamas very hard. Well, I suppose they know that, because that's the leverage that they are hoping to have over the government. The leverage is, do this or you will be punished. Now, here's the thing. Let's be real. I'm going to be real with you, right? You don't really punish the government. Okay? The government of the Bahamas ain't going nowhere. Okay, you don't punish it. You can cause administrations to change. That's for sure. Okay, you can arm them politicians. You're going to vote them out, and 2, 10, 3, 4, 5 months later, a year later, they're back to their own business as usual, trying to do what they could do, and so forth and so forth. So they don't really punish outside of their egos being crushed by you. Cause them to lose, you think. Any sensible politician says, man, that's your right, and move on, and that's the end of that. You don't punish politicians, per se, and you don't punish the government. You know who you punish? You punish the Bahamian people, the ones who rely on the jobs from the tourists. That's who gets punished. And you punish yourselves. That's the reality. Now, I don't, you can get vexed with me. I'll be honest with you. I really can't do anything about that. What I'm saying is, the reality is, see, sometimes we like to sugarcoat stuff. We like to pamper people and so forth, right? But the reality is, you can't punish the government. The government is an institution. It is not the people. It's an institution made up of a minority of elected people. A minority. The vast majority of people who work in the government don't get elected every 5 years. The vast majority don't. The ones who get elected every 5 years, you can't do nothing about them for the next 4+ years. Nothing. You punish them, you cuss them, they can be right there. Unless the prime minister decides to call an election, they'll be right there. So the notion that you're punishing them, oh, I'm going to cost you an election, let me tell you something. In fact, in point of fact, this is one of the reasons why you cannot get great leadership that is unafraid to lose an election. Let me say that to you again. I'm going to say it in plain English for you. If your PLP leadership, if your FNM leadership is afraid to lose an election, they cannot be great for you. The reason for that is sometimes they have to take decisions you don't like. They have to take decisions sometimes many people don't like. And that means, therefore, that they have to take decisions sometimes that may cost them an election. Well, let me ask you who you would respect more. A person who does what they believe to be right and best and still lose, still become unpopular, or someone who kowtows to nonsense because they are trying to preserve their own personal power? Well, my answer is easy on that one. You could have your answer. So you ain't gonna punish the government and you ain't gonna punish politicians per se. If you close down the airport, what happens? The tourists get disrupted, probably don't come. Well, what does that mean? The people at the airport ain't necessary because you need them at the airport to service people, so send them on his own. The taxi drivers ain't necessary because they only got to transport people. Well, if the people ain't coming, who's to be transported? The people at the hotels aren't necessary because the people go to the hotels to be accommodated, but if there ain't no people coming to the hotels to be accommodated, then you don't need the people at the hotels. The restaurant people aren't necessary because you only need the restaurant people because people are coming to be accommodated at the restaurant. If there ain't nobody coming to be accommodated at the restaurant, no problem. The tour operators, what are they necessary for? People aren't taking tours because nobody's coming. And so who suffers? The people of the Bahamas suffer. That's the bottom line. That's the bottom line. Okay, so we need to get that right. Right? Yeah, you can get some fidgety politicians who start thinking, oh, Jesus, you know, we got to get them, we got to satisfy them so we don't lose the election. Yeah, you can get some of that. And the more of them you have, the worse it makes it for life, because every time people feel like they got to do something, they threaten them, boom, that's what happens. Now, with that said, I'm going to say something. Politicians, too many politicians in the country have really just missed the mark on some things that can be avoided. And this is a great lesson for us, because I heard some comments made on the previous show. And I think that sometimes I mean by some callers, not by anyone, it's like some callers. And I think that we aren't clear as we could be on some things. The government of the Bahamas is a single continuous entity. The government of the Bahamas is a single continuous entity, institution. An administration is a political entity host, I think your mic open. An administration like the Penley administration, the Ingram administration, the Christie administration, the Menes administration, the Davis administration, they are merely temporary insertions into government until an election is called. Okay? When an administration is inserted in the government, it merely controls the institution of government, but it doesn't replace it. The institution of government is that which people enter into contracts with. You don't enter into contract with the Menes administration. You don't enter into contracts with the Christie administration. You don't enter into contract with the Ingram administration. You don't enter into contracts with the Penley administration. Or the Davis. You enter into contracts with the government of the Bahamas, and every document you see will reflect that. That is one of the reasons why no politician signs a legal document, contractual obligation on behalf of the government. It's always signed by a permanent secretary. Permanent secretary. It is a reflection of the fact that you are signing a contract with the institutional entity, continuing entity called the government of the Bahamas. Okay? So the government signs a contract with you. That's why people are prepared to give you, to lend you hundreds of millions of dollars, knowing an election is coming. I couldn't care less who gets elected. That's irrelevant to me. I never signed any borrowing contract or lending contract with an administration. I signed it with the government of the Bahamas. And because you get inserted into the government after an election doesn't change the fact that the government of the Bahamas, the continuing institution of the Bahamas, has signed a contract with me, owes me money, and I expect the government of the Bahamas to pay me. And anytime an administration, temporary as it is, reaches that kind of thing, it has just jeopardized the goodwill, trust, and integrity of the institution of the government of the Bahamas and put all of us at risk forever and forever. That's why none of them have been stupid enough to breach contractual obligations, even if they challenge them, even if they try to renegotiate them. They will not simply run in there and cancel these things, as some of you have been wont to say they should do. They know better. Thank God they know better. They know better, because it doesn't work like that. You're listening to Z-Line and Chivago Line, your host. We got much more to say. We'll be back after this break.
Hello? Can you show you something else, boy?
Who this is? Tamika?
You don't even remember my name?
Wildred. Girl, I've been so busy. You still planning your trip?
Girl, and I can't wait. I right here online booking my car.
You dare planning trip. You vaccinated?
Girl, we had to. We ain't been nowhere since this pandemic started. Girl, and we got a 14-day vacation.
Best vacation ever.
Girl, are you though?
Well, I know you's gonna get the vaccine, because you too like travel. When y'all get your vaccine?
Girl, long time. Because you got to get your first dose, wait, then get your second dose at least 2 weeks before you travel. Johnny get his vaccine and he 12. Even Grammy get hers. Child, and Grammy say she ain't get no money. But I see her hiding that under the mattress.
Child, let me send my list, because I know you going shopping.
Keisha, don't play with me.
Vaccinate today, live tomorrow. A message by PAHO, WHO, Canada, and USAID.
Life is full of complicated things. Trading in the Bahamian stock market doesn't have to be one of them. As a BSIC registered broker, RF Stock Brokerage is your direct line to buying and selling shares in publicly traded companies like AML, Cable Bahamas, Doctors Hospital, and more. And with priority trading, and the automatic deposit of your trade proceeds and dividend payments with RF, you're going to love the way you trade. Get started today at rfgroup.com. RF, money at work.
This is Guardian Radio, 96.9 FM, Nassau, Bahamas.
I'm not afraid, I'm not afraid to take a stand.
Ladies and gentlemen, to Z Live. I'm Shivago Lang, your host. I'm so glad you could join us here today on Guardian Radio 96.9 FM on this beautiful Monday afternoon. Our numbers to call, if you want to, 323-6232 or 325-4316 or 325-4259. You can text us on 422-4796 or you can WhatsApp me on 439-3043. So we're talking about the labor unrest that is taking place in the travel industry right now, where the airport seems to have been abandoned by some of our folk who feel aggrieved by the government. And they are, without question, putting at risk what has happened to putting at risk our tourism sector. There's no question about that, right? We could toy with the notion if we want, but that's the reality. But I was saying, though, so we have continuous government, not administrations, but government. So if the union enters into a contract with the government, if all the requisite signatories on behalf of the government signed and all the people in the union signed, here is a fact of life. Whatever is in that contract, it doesn't matter if it's the Minnis administration, the Davis administration, the Port administration, or the Clark administration, the union is owed what it is owed, period. They have an enforceable contract that no one could get around meeting the obligations thereof. And the only way for something in the contract to be changed is for both parties to the agreement, the government side and the union side, to agree to open up the contract for renegotiation. No one can unilaterally decide to change anything. They will both have to agree and then they go and negotiate the same. Otherwise, what is owed is owed. What is obliged, and that's the end of it. Now, I never heard anyone, and I didn't read anything where the government was saying they weren't going to meet the obligation, etc. I didn't hear that, so I don't really know where that notion came from. But the fact of the matter is, once you have a contract, the government is as bound by the contract as is any human being on the planet who is in a legal contract with somebody, and it is enforceable by the courts. So the union, whatever the terms are, they are owed that. They are owed it. Now, if the government is of the view that they can't pay it, and let me tell you something, I've been in the Ministry of Finance. And maybe 30 million to 50 million, 100 million on demand can't be paid. But man, this isn't me. Couple of million dollars, few million dollars, the government of Bahamas could reach an arrangement and agreement with people to get that paid. Especially if it's a contractual obligation. Now, is this a matter of negotiating or what? I didn't hear that. I didn't read it. I don't know. It is money's owed, I understand. Well, you know, it's owed. If it's owed, that means there was a contractual obligation to pay it. You pay it. If you don't have the cash right now, that's possible. It's possible the government doesn't have the cash to pay $10 million right out because it has to meet salaries, it has to meet lease obligations and other things and so forth and so forth. So it can turn it out for people. This thing comes to an agreement. The people, listen, I'm going to pay a lump sum now and I'll pay you an X lump sum later. I'll pay you a lump sum now. I'll pay you the rest in some 2, 3, 4 installments. But that can be done. But to be sure, my friends, unions, listen to me. Y'all are playing a very serious game at a very serious time, Jack. Very serious game. Listen, man. But do you? It's a very serious game at a very serious time. The Bahamas has very little room for slippage. Very little room for slippage. And it has to be possible. It has to be possible on both sides. I don't believe the union's strong arm tactic and the government's strong headed words are not the recipe for reconciliation of an issue. Okay? I mean, you know, it's not. You know, you need, this is time, and these kinds of times in which we find ourselves, we got to be peaceable human beings with the ability to work together to ensure that the ship of state does not sink. Then listen, sometimes in a family, you get to a very ticklish place of economic and financial circumstances where even when you want kicker, even when you want fussa, like you need to just swallow that crap and just say, you know what? Now is not the time. Now is not the time. So I can't get all of what I want. You can't get all of what you want, but we got to do what we need to do to protect the household. And that's where we are in this country. We have very little room for slippage. This text says, great show as usual. If they close down the airport, that should be considered domestic terrorism. That's just my opinion. And I don't agree that it's domestic terrorism, but it's certainly a difficult thing for the country to have to deal with. This text says, the deadline, you're right about the PS is responsible for the contract signing, but they are controlled by politicians, bottom line, come on. Like, no, you're wrong. You're wrong. It's not, they, permanent secretaries are not controlled by anyone, and I don't have to come on anything because I am not, I don't have to fantasize about this. I don't have to opinionate about this because I lived this for 10 years of my life, right? Some of y'all are so insulting to the mature adult people who work in these places. I want you to think about that, how insulting you are to these mature people. You do, like you are such a big person, such an independent-minded person. And you seeing these grown, hip, professional people just walk around doing whatever people tell them to do. You are, that's just baloney. These people will push back against you. I have been there, done that. They have pushed, they will push back against a prime minister. I have seen and operated and watched it. So stop talking nonsense that you don't know, okay? Once the government makes a decision that is lawful, once the government makes a decision that's lawful, a permanent secretary is obligated to proceed along the lines of the request of the government. But a permanent secretary can give advice that says, I think this is nonsense. Or if it's unlawful, they can take steps to ensure that they do not participate in something unlawful. Right? But they're not controlled. Absolute nonsense. By somebody who has not been there or know what is going on. And I'm not going to let you do that and teach people that nonsense because it's utter nonsense. This text says, good day, my friend. I have nothing against anyone that did service to the country, and I don't have a problem if people call him honorable. But for an official event, unless he recently got a local honor from us, his funeral service should read the honorable former member and his name, not the Honorable Vernon Simonet. The word honor should not come directly before his name. He was not prime minister, nor did he serve 2 consecutive terms of 8 to 10 years to attain the honorable title for life. Just trying to clear up stuff for protocol's sake. Well, you don't have to clear it up for me because, first of all, if it's a state-recognized funeral or a state funeral, you don't have to even clarify that for me because that's not my business, nor yours. The government has professional protocol people whose responsibility it is to apply a title as it's to be applied. So that doesn't bother me at all. They will do what is appropriate to do. I was talking about referring to him as honorable in his character relative to what I experienced. So this stuff about what a title should be given and what have you, that's not neither here or there, because the government has people who take care of that. It says Kingsley then need to get those people back to work. We need to make this tourism money. I agree with you on that. So some people say they can't pay their bills, but you started living too good before you got your raise. This money you never had, so you should not have fashioned your life on that money until you got it. All right. Yeah, I'm not blaming workers for wanting to get their monies. If it's owed to them, it's their money. But I do know that there are implications of actions taken in a sensitive area like tourism, where we are already hard pressed. Texas, Mr. Lang, the union and its members are dead wrong for not showing up for work. It's embarrassing to the country and union. Embarrassing? I could take embarrassment. Embarrassment I could take. What I can't take is people deciding why I should be fooling with the Bahamas. Them people don't show up to work. This is my hard-earned money, vacation money, and I go and show up and things topsy-turvy. That there is not a good luck. Ladies and gentlemen, you're listening to Z-Live. I'm Shabar, I'm your host. We'll take a break when we come back. We'll continue our discussion. We'll be back after this break.
I used to think of the bank as my personal ATM machine. If I wanted a new car, new furniture, a weekend trip to Miami, no problem, just max out the credit card or top up my loan. I was a big baller until I realized that 75% of my salary was going to pay back all those loans. Fidelity's personal financial coaching was the best solution. Fidelity gave me a plan with a debt consolidation loan that has a built-in savings that pays 5% interest. I now only have one low monthly payment, plus money in my pocket. Give Fidelity Bank a call at 356-7764 in Nassau or 352-6676 in Freeport. Visit any of Fidelity's locations or visit a website at fidelitygroup.com.
Marsh the car. The lady run into me, marsh the car.
I hope she had insurance.
If she had insurance, she hop out, pull out her phone, pull out the Royal Star Assurance app, and bang, she was on a video call with an RSA rep, sending pictures of her damage, my damage, filing a claim on the spot.
For real? Our insurance have that kind of app?
You gotta go to RSA for that.
Download the RSA app today, or visit rsabahamas.com to submit your claim online. Live chat available weekdays 9 to 5.
This is Guardian Radio, 96.9 FM. Fresh news, smart talk, all day.
I'm not afraid to take a stand, everybody.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to Z-Live. I'm Shabar Olang, your host. I'm so glad that you could join us here today on Guardian Radio, 96.9 FM, on this beautiful Monday afternoon. If you want to call us, the numbers are 323-6232 or 325-4316 or 325-4259. You can text us on 422-4796. That's 422-4796. Or you can WhatsApp me on 439-3043. By the way, I had the first of four sessions of our summer youth talks, Bahamas Youth Leadership Development Program. We had a good group of young people show up and had a wonderful, wonderful beginning discussion about life. And so if you want to join at the next session, which will be next Saturday, starting at 10 o'clock, WhatsApp me and let me know so that we can send you the link, or you can email us at shivagalang@hotmail.com. And I want to congratulate those young people that attended. They were engaged, very serious-minded young people. And, you know, we had a great time. So if you're interested in getting your young person involved, then please feel free to let us know. We have a text here that says, so you mentioned the thing about honorable, so I just thought I would write to inform some people that didn't know. Why do you get so touchy and defensive sometimes? Oh, man, come on, bro. Come on, man. All I'm doing is telling you that I don't concern myself about it because the people who run the thing know how to do it. Yeah, you inform the folk, no problem, man. But why are you getting so touchy? That wasn't on my mind for a second afterwards. Right? Maybe you just don't like the way I talk. Sometimes I talk the way I talk. And let me tell you something, right? I try to change where I can, where it's necessary and so forth. But listen, man, I don't stop nobody from being them, and you ain't gonna stop me from being me. So if you can't take it, you don't like it, I invite you to do something that gives life more pleasure for you. I ain't touchy about that at all, man. You know, it's just the way I talk sometimes, right? Forgive me for being that way and you being so sensitive about it. All right. So yeah, I think that what we need more than anything else is for the government to be able to have a sit down with the union, and the union to be able to have a sit down with the government and try and work this out in these very peculiar times, you know, because there's so much at stake. So much at stake, right? For us to be putting off tourists, turning off tourists, and that kind of thing, you know? We don't need that right now. We don't actually ever need it, but, you know, sometimes are better than other times. And this is certainly not one of those times where we need to be so touchy about these things. Says, what happened to the MOU signed just before election? Given the fragile state of our recently rebounding tourism industry, both sides need to eat humble pie and come to some sort of compromise. Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. Well, you know, the memorandum of understanding that was signed between the two parties was more than anything else a political tool, right? It was part of election campaigning, you know, it was kind of show of force, show of support, that kind of way. In the scheme of things, when the government has to look at the money it has to deal with and all that kind of stuff, that doesn't play a real significant role in how the government operates. And I think the unions will find that out. I mean, this kind of gamesmanship is played so very often, but reality is what it is. Right? Reality is what it is. You got people make promises to people that say they can do this, and the next thing, then when the money ain't right, when things don't go their way, then all of a sudden they take a different approach to life, right? Governments, politicians are no different. MOU or no MOU. You know, when you have that power and you have that purse and you have to stare at the pragmatic realities of what you have to deal with, all of a sudden, the contemplations and considerations come very different. You know how people used to have people go romance you just before you get married? All kind of flowery talk and all that kind of stuff. I never believed in that kind of stuff, to be honest with you. I always thought to myself, whatever you do to get somebody, you got to do to keep somebody. So don't do things you can't keep doing when you get there. But in politics, they don't think about that. They just get the vote. What do you require to get the vote? Sign this, sign that, say this, say that. And after life, it becomes a different story. So I don't expect that memorandum to feature too heavily in the scheme of things at all. Text says, I think most things the government goes through is self-inflicted. If people see the PM us of the travel budget perception will tell you that the government have a lot of money, money like the young people say. Also, essential workers will be looking for money owed to them. Yeah, there's no question but that the government can send signals by way of how it appears to be spending money. That's for sure. A fact. Now, again, as I indicated, if these people are owed a few million dollars, that's a lot of money. But for the government, man, that ain't no thing. But you can't take an illegal strike, though. You can't take illegal industrial action. Now, whether this was illegal or not, I don't know. You know, was it was an orchestrated sit-out or whatever? I don't know. I mean, I leave that to the people whose business it is to sort that out. But at the end of the day, legal or illegal, it is not a good thing for our industry and the one industry that we are relying the most upon to get us back to some level of normalcy following this pandemic. By the way, we got another infectious disease showing its rearing its head. This one, like Ebola, 88% infectious, very infectious, and mortality rate 88%. It's not COVID. This is a family of Ebola, and a couple of cases were observed what's the country now? One of them countries. So now the World Health Organization and those are paying attention to that. That showed up in Ghana. So again, life is tentative, and to be running the risk of doing things that put ourselves in jeopardy, well, that's a huge, huge, huge risk to be taking. Ms. Texas, Mr. Lang, there seems to be a lot of union unrest in the country at this time. Teachers are complaining, nurses are complaining, and now the airport workers. Budget for consultancies has been increased, I think, from $15 million to $50 million. Would it be possible for the government to adjust this amount and use some of the funds to settle these disputes or concerns? Sure. But let me help you with something. Guys, just remember, the government budget only says what the government intends to spend. That money isn't in a bank account, okay? The government will spend $2+ billion in the course of the next 12 months. $3 billion plus the government will spend. $3 billion is not in the bank account somewhere. Okay, that doesn't happen like that. That money has to be earned over time through tax payments, through borrowings. And that happens over time. So it isn't as if the government has $50 million sitting down. Yes, it could decide to reallocate some of that, and as the money comes in, pay what it owes. But just be sure, it isn't as if this money is sitting down with the government able to just pay that out like that. Doesn't work that way. And so from time to time, the government is running, not time to time, on a daily basis, your government is running a $200+ million overdraft. You know what an overdraft is, right? When you spend money you don't have, the banks allow you to use its monies to do your stuff, but your account goes below zero. So it goes $5 below zero, $100 below 2,000. The government is over $200 million below zero on a regular basis. So it's not as if the government could just go and dip into some money because they have $500 million sitting down on a bank account. That's not the case. Government is praying every day, okay, what we collect from customs, what we collected from VAT, is it deposited yet in the account? Okay. And then it could keep rolling over that overdraft, So your government has never sold cash plenty that it could just dip into its pocket every day and go and find $30, $20, $40, $50 million like that. It may seem that way, but it is not that way. So this is a matter of the Treasury looking at its cash flows over time, projecting what it might be, and saying to the government, okay, we may be able to pay $5 million at the end of August, And then based on other obligations, we could pay $2.5 million at the end of October, and then probably pay the balance by Christmas. That's what has to happen. You have to have a sense of what is doable given all the financial obligations the government has, including salaries, rents, leases, payments to contractors, and all these kinds of things, debt payments that are due, and they are among the first that have to be paid. You have to look at all of that and say, where do I find the cash flow to be able to meet this particular obligation? And the extent to which these obligations hang over from a former administration is the extent to which you could be sure they were in a tight bind yourself trying to pay it and were really only stalling, you know, trying to push the can, the thing down the road. Ladies and gentlemen, you're listening to Z Live. I'm Shivago Lang, your host. We're going to take a break for news, and then when we come back, we continue our discussion. We'll be back after the news break.
This is Guardian Radio, 96.9 FM, Nassau, Bahamas.
I'm not afraid, to take a stand, Everybody, come take my hand, We'll walk this road together through the storm, whatever weather.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to Z Live. I'm Shivago Lang, your host. So glad you could join us here today on Guardian Radio 96.9 FM on this beautiful Monday afternoon. I trust and hope that you are doing well. If you want to call us, the numbers are 323-6232 or 325-4316 or 325-4259. That's 325-4259. You can text us on 422-4796, or you can WhatsApp me on 439-3043. I want to do this for the benefit of my texter who suggested that I was attacking him or her. I'm not sure. Is it him or her? Is he? Maybe a, yeah, him. What I said about the fact that the protocol people at the Ministry of Foreign Affairs and those have a responsibility to guide the government on what should be the title of somebody or not. This person suggested that I was talking to them, but that I want you to, I'm going to read something they wrote. They said, some people say they can't pay their bills, but you started living too good before you got your raise. This money you never had, so you should not have fashioned your life on that money until you got it. Now, would somebody think that they were attacked by that wording? You see, when our egos get caught up, we sometimes forget what we do and what we say. All right, so let me apologize if you felt attacked, because I certainly didn't want to attack you, but just to remind you that you know, your words could have been seen by the people who are striking as an attack, but I didn't take it as such. I thought it was a very sensible something you said, right? But I don't have that egoic challenge to myself that I feel like every time somebody says something, I don't like the way they say it, it's an attack on me. We have a call on the line. Go ahead, caller, we're listening to you.
Good afternoon, Mr. Lang.
Hey, how you doing?
I hope your family is doing well.
Everybody's good enough. Thank you.
Mr. Lang, based on your experience and what you've taught us over the many months and your time spending in the Ministry of Finance as Chief Executive Finance Officer, as we see, we are, as my observation is, we are basically being controlled by the events happening around the world from the hurricanes, from the global warming, from big cities like Russia up against Ukraine over land and oil and whatever else they're fighting over. These things are affecting people all over the world, including people like us, who basically import everything into our country. We don't take time to even try. We attempt to try to feed ourselves, but even the farmers are finding it difficult to get equipment and things in to do the work, the farms, and to get laborers to work for them. And then we see the cost of gas. I see it being advertised now that Rubis is up over $7 a gallon. The cost of everything is going up around us. People like myself, who's retired since 2011, now I find myself with the cost of living going up, the salary remains the same. There's very little that we can do as citizens, like I said, because we basically buy everything. We don't control the prices, although we try to have these price-controlled people. But like one supermarket owner once said, if he can't afford to make the profit because him and his wife are straight now, his children are straight, he's now working for his grandchildren. He said if he can't remain his profit to keep his family and his business the way he wanted, he'll either close down stores or lay off people. And the government doesn't want that. The government wants people to be employed. How do you see we will get out of this situation where the cost of everything is going up on us? Some businesses have not been reopened since the pandemic hit us. Some businesses have not, even if they open up, they didn't hire all the staff they did, or maybe they brought on new staff at smaller wages. How do you see, as an economist, we can possibly get out of the situation we in? Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Sparky. That's a very good question, insightful observation, set of observations you make. The truth of the matter is there are no easy fixes to it, and there's no one solution to it. It's a combination of things that have to happen. And the first thing I'd have to say is on the level of the person, where it is possible, so don't nobody jump down my throat, where it is possible, you make the adjustments you have to make in your own life to accommodate the realities that you are faced with. Where the higher cost is there and you don't have more income, you have to make adjustments. You have to cut expenses where you can. You have to reduce the financial obligations where you can. You have to reorganize so that your cash flow situation is more manageable where you can. Eat less of certain things, drive less to conserve fuel, etc., where you can. Like if you're a retired person, that may not be possible at all. So outside of that, you have to seek assistance from the government where you can, because that's your taxpayers' money. You've been paying it all this while. Maybe you need it now. You go and try and get the assistance where you can. Maybe there's a church that can help in other places, your family members, friends. You just have to do what you have to do. In terms of the country, the Bahamas government has to do the same thing that the people have to do, has to conserve. It has to be able to, not drastically to the furthering deterioration of the economy, pull back on spending, but spend wisely. You have to spend wisely and be able to limit the extent to which you're continuously borrowing in the environment now. And then you've got to double up on the opportunities to really get new investments into the place, whether that's Bahamian investment or foreign investment. You have to, because the elixir to some of this is more economy, so that more people can get employed, more people can get some better income and so forth. The route that the government is going down in respect of minimum wage, listen, I'm happy for the people who get the increased minimum wage, but it is going to have an impact on employment. Employers are not going to just sit there and soak up an increase in their expenses that doesn't get matched by revenue or sales. They are going to make adjustments. You heard what the grocery store owner said? Listen, man, I'm not going to just sit here and not get the profits I need to get to be able to do for my grandchildren what I want to do. They're either closed down or they're going to reduce staff. That is the reality. Okay, but to be sure, our medium to long term out on this situation is more investment, more diversified investment, not just investment in tourism, investment in new industries, investment in manufacturing and transformation sectors of the economy. That's going to have to happen. But for that to happen, we have got to be more accommodating. We've got to be more liberal, and we got to let the spigot flow, and then we can decide one day if we could, you know, pull it back. But for the time being, you can't play cute. Trying to be out there trying to talk about, oh, we only want this, we only want that, we only want the next thing. You got to turn the spigot on so that you can get that capital coming in, generate some employment opportunities for these young people and not so young people, get some income growing and so forth, and then maybe down the line, if things start to pick up sufficiently enough, you can start to pull back and say, okay, well, you know, we want to contain it something. But in the meantime, to my mind, that is what has to happen. Restraint on the part of the individual, some restraint on the part of the government, but at the same time, an aggressive push to attract new diversified investments, some investment in alternative energy, as opposed to the fossil fuel, a real genuine investment, a real opportunity to convert ourselves from a greater dependence on fossil fuel to lesser dependence on fossil fuel would be a significant aid to our economic fortunes. Significant aid. No? Speaking of our minimum wage, the hotel unions are concerned about the employers in that sector making a push to the government to give them, their workers, a lesser increase in minimum wage because those workers also get gratuity. The employers are arguing that they should, because these people get the gratuity, that they should be able to take a lesser hit on minimum wage. So what the employer is trying to do is push the increase in minimum wage less from themselves, right? So they don't have to directly soak up that increase in the minimum wage because these workers can get that additional money from the tourists who will have to pay the gratuity, okay, and the others who have to pay that gratuity. The unions are saying, no. We've been taken for a ride long enough. We've been taken for a ride. Now, I would love Mr. Darren Woods, who is the chief of the Bahamas Hotel Catering and Allied Workers Union, to come on Z Live. But I really would. I'd like to understand his what he means by they have been taken for a ride for too long. Like, what does that mean? I'd like to know what is it that if the union, if the workers in the hotel sector were not taken for a ride, what would that look like? I really would like to know. Well, I'd like to know what that would look like for sure. Because it's an interesting comment from him, because he seems to be thinking that they've borne the brunt of some disadvantage for too long. And like, what is that disadvantage? And how long has this disadvantage been imposed on hotel workers? I would really like to know, honestly. So Mr. Woods, any day you'd like to, if you can give me a shout, I'd love to have you come on. I'd love to talk. You may not even want to do it on the show. Maybe you want to explain it to me off air. We can talk about it and I can get a better understanding. But I'd like to know what you mean by that. But clearly the union is not agreed and does not believe the government would go down that road. Honestly, I don't think so either. Because There are other areas in the economy where people get commissions and other things. And so why would they also not be subject to a lower minimum wage increase than the hotel sector? That's one of the points the union leadership makes. But I don't think the union, I don't think the government will do that because it's just, it's not palatable to say on workers, listen to me. If you're in the government, if you're in the private sector, be sure of something, right? It's easier to know. Not always the case, but it's easier to know that government decisions is for the votes. Let me say it again. The government's decisions, especially when they are controversial, they follow votes. Or they follow money. This is why you tell the people business. Let me show what I mean, right? If a group of business people are heavy funders of a political party, a government's decision can follow those group of business people. If that is not the case, and I can give an example of where that was the case, probably, for the gambling referendum, the people voted one way, and the government did another something. Why do you think that was? But if that is not the case, then the government's decision is largely going to follow, or the controversial issue is going to follow the votes. You think that the government is going to say to hotel workers, thousands and thousands of hotel workers, we're going to give everybody else a minimum wage increase, but you are going to get a lesser increase? Come on. It ain't gonna happen. Well, let me not say that. I think it's very improbable that it will happen. Very improbable. Now, I can understand to some degree the employers in the tourism sector making this case, mind you, because of this. And somebody, you can text me if I am wrong about this. But for the most part, I believe, you remember there was a time ago, I don't know, man, I don't know how many of y'all remember this, but certainly anybody who's older than I am would remember this. There was a time ago where you earned your tips. You did a great service for people, you really treated people well, so forth and so forth. People were happy to give you that extra couple of dollars, but it wasn't mandatory. It wasn't on the bill. Now, I believe, there is a mandatory 15% gratuity or so, right? Somebody tell me if I'm wrong about that. So this isn't my choice anymore. Whether I get bad service or good service, don't matter. I am going to pay a 15% gratuity. In essence, that gratuity is a part of the worker's pay. And so, if you put the two of them together, maybe the employers are arguing, well, to be honest with you, these people are making above minimum wage. Why? Because the gratuity is above the gratuity and the pay is above minimum wage. And so we're not saying to you, don't give them anything. We're just saying don't give them as much because take into consideration the gratuity. Because the minimum wage on top of that is going to increase my cost. Well, I can see them making that argument, but it won't sell. I don't think it will sell in the broad scheme of things. This text says, I think the hotels are right. I would raise the hotel minimum wage to 2020, not to see him as other workers to 250. When Darren Woods comes on the show, please ask him why he is still president. Give me a... So union elections is every 3 years. He was elected in 2018. By union constitution, he should have called election from May 2021. It is now July 2022. He is an illegal president. Really? Well, yeah, I mean, that's a good question. I don't know. I don't know the answer to this. But I'd love to get him on to explain some of this. I don't think that, you know, our politics is a very interesting business. Okay, I was there. And so, you know, I know what I'm talking about isn't something I'm removing myself from. It's an interesting business, right? Some people make it more interesting than others. Because, like, I just want you to imagine, right? And this is how you imagine it. I want you to imagine that you and your family have a business. Okay, you and your family have a business. And the business is really just barely making it. Let's say barely making no real big profits, but y'all can pay yourselves so that you can live, right? So you're barely making it. And then all of a sudden, like, you have a huge fire in the business, a huge fire in the, and it kind of devastates you. You lose a lot of revenue, but you're able to bring it back. You're able to bring it back on stream. Okay? And it's still, it isn't even now making what it was making before. It's making below what it was making before. I want you to, when I ask this question, I'm gonna take a break to give you a chance to ask me. I want you to tell me, if you're the head of that business, whether you're the mother or the father or both, if the family members who are not the head of that business came to you and told you, given that you are not now making what you used to be making, but you got the business back up and running, you're trying to get it back on track, they said to you, we want a raise. We had a raise for a little while, we want a raise. I want you to tell me what you would tell them. And then when we come back, we'll talk about it. You're listening to Z Live and Chicago Live. We'll be back after this break.
To think of the bank as my personal ATM machine. If I wanted a new car, new furniture, a weekend trip to Miami, no problem. Just max out the credit card or top up my loan. I was a big baller until I realized that 75% of my salary was going to pay back all those loans. Fidelity's personal financial coaching was the best solution. Fidelity gave me a plan with a debt consolidation loan that has a built-in savings that pays 5% interest. I now only have one low monthly payment, plus money in my pocket. Give Fidelity Bank a call at 356-7764 in Nassau or 352-6676 in Freeport. Visit any of Fidelity's locations or visit a website at fidelitygroup.com.
Storm, whatever weather, cold or warm, let me know that you're not alone. Holla if you rock. Now I'm so fed up, time to put my life back together.
Z Live. I'm Shabab Rolang, your host. So glad you could join us here today on Guardian Radio 96.9 FM on this beautiful Monday afternoon. And if you want to call, the numbers are 323-6232 or 325-4316 or 325-4259. You can text us at 422-4796. Or you can WhatsApp me on 439-3043. None of you will answer me. None of you will answer me. If your family had a business and it was just barely making it, then you had a major fire that shut the business down for a while, caused it to lose revenue, but you were able to scrap and get it back together. And now it isn't making as much money as it used to make. If you're the mother, the father, or both who run the business, if your other family members came and said they wanted a raise, what would you do? What would you say to them? Nobody answer me? No one? For real? Okay, how about this? What if the parents who run the business decided that they were gonna, in the middle of trying to get the business built up, take a big fancy vacation and tell the rest of y'all run the business and what have you, leave, go take a vacation? What would you say? I'm going somewhere with this. Nobody wouldn't say anything. Doesn't matter? For real? No one? That's okay. It's cool. This text says we would have to agree to increase incrementally. We would have to agree to increase incrementally, that is, if the raise is warranted. Okay, but remember now, you before the fire, you were barely making it. After the fire, you haven't even gotten back to where you're barely making it anymore. You're not making as much anymore. And your folk are asking for a raise. Or mommy and daddy decide they're going on vacation. What do you do? What do you say? How do you respond to something like that? All right? Anybody else? Now, you're just, honestly now, you're just thinking about it, or you're just saying, want to write, or want to respond? Because I'm about to think, maybe this is the prevailing disposition in the country, and so basically, it don't really matter. Says if you say understood, if you give them nothing, you increase the probability of them resigning, which would mean you have to come up with the more money to hire new staff. But let me ask you, where are you gonna get the money from to give an increase if you are already not making as much money as you used to make before? Like if you were barely making it, right? Meaning with the pay that you were paying people, you were barely making it. Now you're making less than the money you used to make. Where are you going to get the money to pay the additional income? That's the question. right? That's the question. Where you can get that additional money? See, because this is the situation that we are in with the country. Like, we don't see it this way, and I understand why it is that we may not see it this way. If this person asked the question, is finding ways to increase the revenue on the table Absolutely. Absolutely. Here's one of the things that happens in the country that we don't see. I think too many of us don't see. I know that we have a world where it's oftentimes us and them. So there's the employer, and then there's the employee. There's us and them. The employer sees the employee as them. The employee sees the employers as them. So it's us and them. And I understand that. But here's the thing. When you look at the collective house of the Bahamas, okay, we might not see it this way, but when we look at the collective house of the Bahamas, they know us and them. They know us and them. We are all in this house. Now, we have a house, the well-being of which depends upon how well we can deal with each other. You can't be an employer, make up all the money, and then your greedy self pocket all the money and go live the lifestyle of the rich and famous and have your employees scrambling and scrapping even to buy the things you sell. Now, if you all don't believe me, but that, let me tell you all, some of y'all, I'm going to tell some of you employers something right now that has been my experience and experience with people over and over repeatedly. Some of your staff, while your customers are complaining about your prices, are agreeing with your customers that the prices are too high and telling them the price is increasing every other day. Your staff are doing it. You know why they're doing it? Because one, for them it's true. And two, they are pissed off by what they see as an unfair scenario in which they do the work they think, and you take home the gains they think. You ain't gonna get no argument on the Chicago line on this. It's your money, your capital, your risk. I understand, bro, why you taking that profit on. Bless the Lord. Thank you, Jesus, for you. You ain't gonna get no arguments on me. But I would be a fool to tell you, you live in a world where you can just go live the life of Riley, offer the proceeds of your business, your workers are living in poverty or living barely scraping it or working poor, and they don't build up some resentment toward you about where they see you living and your family members and where they living. Because if they got eyes to see and they just talk and they see, right? So it's just one household. And when the distortion in living between the members of the household is too great, anxieties, resentment, cynicism, and all that builds up toward conflict. Right? That's what happens. So when the employee asks for a raise in a circumstance where the house is struggling to make it, it could be regarded as unreasonable. When the employer is lavishly spending in a circumstance where the house is not doing well, it could be seen as unreasonable. And only when we all work together, or at least attempt to work together, to make the house better off, might we get better results for the house. Because at the end of the day, if we don't keep the house standing, none of us shall have shelter in the rain. None of us shall have shelter in the winter. None of us shall have cool in the summer because the whole house has collapsed. You say that's not possible. You stay right there. You stay right there. It is possible. And so that's what that scenario I presented is. It's you can't, the owners can't do as they please without regard for the employees, and the employees can't make demands without regard for the appetite and interest of the owners. That's not possible. Not possible at all. And wherever that situation prevails, nothing good can come of it. Nothing good tends to come of it. And the more we create, and it is happening, the Bahamas is increasingly becoming a us against them society. And let me tell you how we do it. You know, see, you don't put a name and a face on them owners. You don't put a name and a face on them employers. You don't put a name and a face on them workers. You don't put a name and a face on them employers. Listen to me, folks. If you go and look at places where very grotesque things have happened in the society, let me tell you how it starts. It starts by making the other a faceless, nameless other. Them cockroaches. That's where that starts. Goonies. Them niggas. Come here, boy. No name, no face. That's why they can call you no name. No name, no face. That's just them monkeys. Okay? Because it's easy to stab. It's easy to beat. It's easy to lynch. It's easy to hang. It's easy to mistreat. It's easy to abuse something without a face or a name. Because once you put a face or a name on it, you are almost compelled to show some compassion for its humanity, for its dignity. Right? So we have to be careful. You know, in this Bahamian society, we are a Bahamian family. My name is Shivago Lang. Your name is what your name is. And I'm a person and you're a person. And those people who may come to our shores from other places too, they got names and they got faces and humanity. And anytime we try to dehumanize them, we just try to call them the other, these Haitians, these Jamaicans, these Americans, them people, these are foreigners, them owners, them politicians, them voters. You know, in a way that robs them of their humanity and allows us to carry on and insult, embarrass, denigrate, and so forth. A worker, every worker, is a person with a name and a face, with a life experience, with hopes and dreams and aspirations, with pains and hurts. And so is every owner. Being rich don't rob you of having feelings. Or being an owner doesn't rob you of having interest, hopes and dreams and aspirations. Having a big fancy car doesn't stop you from being somebody who will be insulted or offended when you call them a bad name or speak poorly about them behind their backs. It's easier to sympathize and empathize with somebody you're prepared to see as a human being and not as what they belong, what they hold, what they own, what they belong to, what they don't own, what they don't belong to. You're listening to Z-Live. I'm Shabbat, I'm your host. We'll take our final break, and when we come back, we'll continue and conclude our discussions for the day. We'll be back after this break.
When faced with an illness like cancer, we band together.
and we at Cleveland Clinic in Florida have your back. From advanced cancer treatments to extra safety measures at all of our locations, we're with you on this journey. For every infusion and follow-up, for every step of the way, for every care in the world, Cleveland Clinic in Florida. Get the care you need when and where you need it. To learn more or connect with a local representative, visit clevelandclinic.org/Caribbean.
Life is full of complicated things. Trading in the Bahamian stock market doesn't have to be one of them. As a BSIC registered broker, RF Stock Brokerage is your direct line to buying and selling shares in publicly traded companies like AML, Cable Bahamas, Doctors Hospital, and more. And with priority trading and the automatic deposit of your trade proceeds and dividend payments, with RF, you're going to love the way you trade. Get started today at rfgroup.com. RF, money at work.
This is Guardian Radio, 96.9 FM, Nassau, Bahamas.
I'm not afraid, to take a stand.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to Z Live. I'm Shivago Lang, your host. So glad you could join us here today on Guardian Radio, 96.9 FM, on this beautiful Monday afternoon. This text says, "You are on point, my brother. Great job, my friend. Thank you. Appreciate it. I'm trying to help. So you forgot the word, shine them shines." Yeah, all kinds of words people can use to describe the other. You just have to be careful. That's all I'm saying. And I want you to know that the things that I am sharing, I do not remove myself from, in terms of our collective experience as a people. It is easy to fall victim to your ego, and in doing so, to take the wrong approach to things. And what do I mean by wrong approach? Wrong approach meaning you become judgmental, you get trapped in this duality where it's either my way or no way. You come to see the world as me against them, and that people are out to get me or get us, or, you know, and it positions you to be a defensive, survivalistic, petty, vengeful, vindictive soul, because you're so full of your own self-doubt, self-hate, and sense of inferiority that you always feel the victim. And let me tell you something. You know what a victim feels like. It is not a pleasant feeling at all. It is in fact a humiliating way to feel, to feel that you're being put upon, to feel like you're being beat upon, to feel like you're being, there's an attempt to destroy you. That's not a good feeling, man. And all that could do is make you want to lash out, make you need to defend yourself, make you want to hurt somebody because you're trying to get this thing off of you. The only way to overcome that, right, is to allow yourself to dwell in reality, right? Because a lot of times the victim that we feel is a product of our imaginations, where we're living in our minds, telling ourselves stories that may not be true. But if you try to ground yourself in reality, the reality that, for instance, the Bahamas is still in the throes of a pandemic, still trying to overcome the economic hardship of that pandemic. It has resulted in a great deal of harm to our economic fortunes. We are now trying to rebound from that fortune, and it's a tentative situation that we have to guard with some carefulness. And yes, I acknowledge my own need and desire for some additional revenue, my need to get my money and so forth and so forth. But as I press for my money, as I press for my better, am I causing a harm that will injure that better into the medium or long term and therefore create even more hardship for myself? Is there a better way? Is there a different way? Look at my texter who said, listen, is finding ways to increase revenue on the table. Absolutely. That's what you call, what's his name? Stephen Covey wrote a book called The Third Alternative. And what Stephen Covey was saying was, very often we look at life through a lens of duality or one or two alternatives. But he said, you know, if you look at it, there's probably always another alternative, maybe several other alternatives. So in the one instance, you could say to the employees, no, we can't take a raise now because, you know, we're still trying to get over this fire. The other instance, you could say to the my parents, no, you can't take a vacation now because, you know, we just got over this fire and we're trying to struggle with our way back. Or you could say that both, listen, I tell you what, let's see if we can get back to at least our pre-fire situation. If we can get back there, however soon we get back there, we'll give the raise, and maybe it won't be as much as you would like, but we will definitely do something that we can agree. And then you can take a vacation. Maybe it won't be as big a vacation as you want, but maybe it's something that allows you to get the rest, the relaxation you require. And so we can all come to agreement on that. So now what we're doing, we're working toward a solution that provides us with the outcomes that we both want. And that's a better way. You know, if people are trying to at least get by the difficulties they are in. This text says, when the business was doing well, the raise was promised. Then the pandemic came and it was not paid. Now they are flying around and living high, telling the rest of the family, keep working, but there's no money. Yeah, that's a problem. So adding insult to injury, they do not communicate their challenges to pretend as if the monies are not owed. Call them, no response. Ask for meetings, no response. The only thing they respond to is industrial action. Meet, state the case and agree to make incremental payments. I agree. I mean, I definitely see that assessment as being a problem. That's why I was saying everybody has to see themselves as in the house. And I can tell you something. I spoke to a very respected person one time under the former administration. And we were lamenting how some of the agitations that some of these workers were experiencing was so easily resolved by a little attention, right? And so I can see how people could take the approach that, you know, you have to do something drastic, but, folks, I'm only saying, break this tourism horse. All I'm saying is, we'll be on an IMF program by the end of 2024. Let me say that for y'all again. If we break this tourism horse, now you might say we can't break it, but if we break it, I mean, if we damage the tourism horse sufficiently that we lose 20, 30, 40% of the tourists we're getting, we will be on an IMF program by the end of 2024. So, all I'm saying is, there are ways to get politicians' attention. I can tell you, you know how to strike only to get politicians' attention. Industrial people don't have to only strike to get politicians' attention. I can tell you that. I ain't about to give you that information on the air. But that ain't the only way. See, because let me explain something to you. A politician's currency his popularity. But if you do something to a politician that makes people hurt, then you will do nothing for his popularity, because you will make the people and the politician now have be common allies. Why? Because your enemy, their enemy, you hurting them, becomes the enemy of the politician too. And the enemy of my enemy is my friend. So I ain't never buy a situation or an action that makes people hurt as a means of hurting politicians. You better pray the people see the politician as the reason. Now, once they see that, if they see that, you're straight. If they don't see that, you ain't straight. But you'll see. Many of our politicians say, we won't be strong, huh? You know what they're thinking? They are thinking popular support is not on your side. You can believe that. As long as they're talking that kind of talk. Now, when you see the wind shift, you'll know. If you see the wind shift, if you see the population starts to say, well, why they can't just give the people that made money and so forth, then you'll hear something different. But I understand the circumstances that can lead someone to take actions that they believe is necessary to get attention. But boy, let me tell you something. Every action comes with consequences. And there are some consequences in the present circumstances of the Bahamas cannot be endured. Cannot. I truly trouble my soul for the young people of this country. I do. Because as it stands, their futures are more tentative than we have seen in probably two generations. Their prospects for better, probably less bright than has been seen by two generations of Bahamians. They stand in a situation where they can hardly see or believe that there is a collective mindset and understanding toward granting them a better future. And that's a hell of a place to be living in. That's a hell of a way to be living in. And it is no wonder that they are less enthusiastic about remaining in this country than we have ever seen in our history. This text says, yes, it's anxiety inducing. What is it that we can do? Leave? Well, I'll tell you, many are making that choice. But that's not the way. That's not good for this country. It's not the way. It's not good for this country. But I am unapologetic about the fact that the most attractive candidate for those people is economic opportunity. That's what they need, because it starts with that. They want to be able to fund their hopes, their dreams, and their aspirations. If an economy cannot provide that for them, they will start looking elsewhere. And so if we start threatening that economy, as wounded as it is already, we are further damaging the confidence and hope that the young can have in that economy's ability to meet their needs and to supply and fund their dreams. You've been listening to Z Live. I'm Shabab Lang, your host. I hope you have a wonderful evening. God bless, and we'll talk to you again tomorrow.
I'm not afraid to take a stand.